Let's go in-depth on Hawkeye sports with the Des Moines Register. It's time for Hawk Central on 1460 KXNO.
Happy Wednesday evening, Hawkeye fans, and welcome into a highly anticipated edition of the Hawk Central Radio Show. I'm your host, Chad Lystico, sports columnist at the Des Moines Register, as always. Probably good that we were on the air from 9 to 10 p.m. tonight on KXNO. Because we had a lot of late afternoon news, and it was a very long press conference today with Iowa head football coach Kirk Ferentz, AD Gary Barta, recruiting director Tyler Barnes, as it pertains to potential change or not within the Iowa football program. We will certainly discuss the surging Iowa basketball team later in the show, as the Hawkeyes are coming off impressive outbursts of 93 and 86 points to knock off second-place Rutgers and second-place Northwestern, to improve their chances both against stingy defensive teams. But obviously, the top of the headline today is Iowa football. And let's cut to the chase and get cranked up for today's long-awaited presser with my friend Kennington Smith. Kennington, first of all, welcome. Thanks for being in Iowa City. We'll get to why I couldn't be there in a moment. But let's just start with the headlines. I'll let you kind of take it since you were there, and then just give me your initial thoughts to Kirk Ferentz's, essentially defense of the current staff.
Yeah, I know we're going to get into three-word headlines later, so I don't want to ruin the surprise, but I have a three-word headline to start the show, which is no staff changes. And that is the headline out of Wednesday's presser. And there was a great amount of questioning about Brian Ferentz's performance, where the offense stands, potential changes to the scheme, and what exactly has gone wrong over the last few seasons. And Kirk Ferentz pointed a lot to the circumstances around Iowa's season this year. And this is something that I've kind of teased on Twitter and we've talked about on recent podcasts that we've done is there the belief within Kirk Ferentz that he has the right coaches and that the player personnel hasn't quite been there? And I think today was confirmation of that belief, that whether it be execution or talent or injuries or whatever the case may be, Iowa's coaches have been hamstrung by their circumstances and it was hard to evaluate their performance, much like the quarterback position this year, where he said, well, it's hard to evaluate Spencer Petras and Alex Padilla because the line's been so young and beat up and we've had injuries at receiver and those type of things. I kind of drew that parallel to that. And that's kind of what my main takeaway was from Wednesday. And before we go any further, I would like to clear something up about something that happened in the presser and then what was subsequently said by me and others on Twitter. So Kirk Ferentz said that David Davikoff, offensive lineman, is on a medical scholarship and will not return to football. And then afterwards, he was asked about offensive lineman Justin Britt, to which Kirk said he's on a medical and will graduate. He didn't explicitly say that Justin Britt was done with football, but because the two were kind of lumped together in back-to-back questions, an assumption was made that Justin Britt is retiring from football. He came on Twitter shortly after and corrected that and said that he's not retiring from football. So okay, offering an apology to Justin Britt, obviously that was something that I'm sure kind of raised his eyebrows when he kind of saw that people were speculating that he was done with football. He cleared the air. So that was an assumption that was made. There should have been more clarification as far as if he was done playing football. So for okay, the people that were wondering and saw it on Twitter, Justin Britt is now retiring, but he is still dealing with injury issues. And certainly we wish him the best moving forward in the spring practice and next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that clarification. Obviously, Kennington, essentially what Kirk Ferentz did today was kind of line up his defense for keeping the offensive staff intact, including his son, Brian Ferentz. Yeah, you kind of mentioned it there. He did not put blame on the quarterbacks. He did put blame on the offensive line and wide receivers. Those circumstances, as you said, I think you could argue, you could make a lot of arguments there. And no question, offensive line play, not good last year. Wide receivers, being down to one scholarship guy with experience in your first two games, that's not good. But at the same time, I would argue, your own offensive scheme drives players away from the program. Your own offensive coordinator is unpopular among at least not retaining, this high level talent, and the offensive line coach you brought in has not developed these guys enough. Now, Kirk Ferentz blames injuries, up front, and that's definitely valid. I mean, you just referenced Davidkoff and Britt. I mean, those are two guys that were highly recruited and, unable to play last year. Cody Ince was unable to play. We saw, other injuries. We saw a rookie center take place with Logan Jones and, just kind of underperforming Hawkeyes. I mean, Jennings Dunker was hurt for a time. Bo Stevens was out for a time. Nick DeYoung was kind of banged up all year. So I totally get all that. But at the same time, that's part of the job, right? That's part of the job to have players in place that can win you football games and actually block. And Kirk Ferentz is supposed to be an offensive line guy. Brian Ferentz is supposed to be an offensive line guy. George Barnett is off the Joe Moore, cut from the Joe Moore cloth. So, that's all on them. And so, to say the staff has done an exemplary job, I don't feel like that's telling the full story. But that was one defense I thought, just to point out, that is one of his defenses. Plenty of other defenses here of the offense, in a way. I mean, he did say, I guess, right, that he's, they own it, they got to get better. But he likes the coaches they have in place. So I guess what else jumped out to you before I get, take over this too much, Kennington, as far as what other kind of defenses did you hear from Kirk Ferentz about keeping Brian Ferentz as OC?
Yeah, I would also lump in Gary Barta, athletic director, as well in this next defense that I'm going to bring up, which is if you look at Brian's tenure across the last six seasons, points per game is a measure in which Iowa has really fallen short of the mark in the last two seasons. But both Kirk Ferentz and Gary Barta pointed to the first 4 years of Brian's tenure in which Iowa averaged 29 points per game, which comparatively to this season feels astronomical. But if you look at where that number, 29 points per game, where did that rank in 4 years that they're referencing? It would be 66th in the country. So that's, completely middle of the row, mediocre, average, whatever you want to call it. That is the ceiling that they're pointing to say Brian Ferentz is doing an adequate job as offensive coordinator. Is from 2017 to 2020, we were averaging 29 points per game. We experienced a lot of success, and the last 2 years have gone wayward, but he has shown an ability to get us to a point where we're scoring enough points to win. So that was another very notable defense. And another one, which I think that people were attacking, I don't know if that's the right word, but something pointed to also was Kirk relied a lot on the overall team success to mask the offensive ineptitude by speaking to the fact that in the last 5 years, only Michigan and Ohio State have won more games in the Big Ten than Iowa. And since 2015, Iowa is one of five teams that have won eight games or the equivalent based on winning percentage, because they only won six in 2020 in a shortened year of COVID every year since 2015. So it is very much reminiscent of we won 10 games. I'm not sure you're aware of that, and won the Big Ten West, and they're in a position to play for a Big Ten West title last season. For as much as you can point to the offense and its lack of performance as a hindrance to Iowa's success, they have still experienced a great amount of success. And that is buying goodwill for the offensive staff, according to Kirk Ferentz. So those are two others that really stuck out to me. And I think, believe it was Scott Docterman in The Athletic asked Kirk directly, what is it that Brian Ferentz does well as a game planner and a play caller? And Kirk's immediate response was, well, I'll loop him and Phil Parker together and LeVar Woods. But that wasn't the question.
Right.
Obviously, Phil Parker knows how to game plan and call plays. Iowa's defense is elite. Obviously, LeVar Woods knows what he's doing as special teams coordinator because Iowa special teams is a lead. We're asking about Brian Ferentz as a single entity, and Kirk was able to use the success of the other two phases to mask what Iowa's offense has not done over the last few years.
Great stuff, Kennington. Another thing he mentioned was last year, Hawkeyes, won 10 games, went 10-4. Again, the wins argument, which obviously you can't deny that. I always had, a good track record of wins. I think the widespread feeling, and I'm not going to say it's the whole fan base, but the widespread feeling is that you've got this essentially number one defense in the country this year. You've got an elite defense, elite special teams. Can you just get to average on offense? That's been the constant plea, right? And so,
yeah,
in 29, I do think, people would actually, Iowa probably would have won 10 games this year. We've gone 10-3 or something this year. Right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Iowa's defense and special teams this year with a 30-point-per-game offense could have challenged Michigan and Ohio State in the regular season this year. Not to say that they would have beaten them, but they could have played them close with a top 50 offense and the great defense and special teams that they had. I mean, I feel like that was on display in both of those games. I mean, the defense did everything that they could to keep those games competitive. And you could look at the box score and the final stats and say Iowa got blown out, but you had to watch it with your own eyes to see what was happening. And that's where you're pointing to the fans' frustration is Iowa is winning, yes, but how much more could Iowa win with a better offense is the question at hand.
Yeah, exactly. To that point, Kirk Ferentz, this was one thing I thought fell apart too for him, is he said, we averaged 23 points a game last year, talking about 2021, and won 10 games, and everyone was against us, basically. He's like, it was like, nobody was happy even though we went 10-4. That was kind of his argument. He goes, but I think back to 2009 when we averaged 23 points a game, and we won 11 games and won the bowl game, and everyone was pretty happy. Which is true. I mean, that was the highest ranked team of the Ferentz era. They finished number 7 in the country. They went 11-2. There was a little blip in there with the Ricky Stanzi injury and whatnot, and they didn't have a great running game that year. So there are the parallels. That said, 23 points a game in 2009 is not the same as 23 points a game in 2022 because or 2021. It's a difference of 86th versus 99th in the national rankings. That's a big difference. I mean, it's more of an offensive game now, and that's why it's kind of silly to keep comparing yourself to 1981 and 1989. And I think those are the things that people get frustrated at, and I get frustrated at it too, because it's not intellectually correct. You need to acknowledge the fact that the game has changed. It's more offensive based now, and Iowa has a great defense. All you need to do is be competent on offense. And then Kirk Ferentz, to the final point here, Kennington, on this, did take some of the blame himself. He even said that, right? He pointed to the Purdue game this year, which was kind of a weird example, but let's just share what Kirk Ferentz said. He's like, basically, we got up 24-3, and I put the brakes on everything, and we just basically, ran into the line the rest of the game and wanted to take the win on a windy day, inferring that the Hawkeyes could have racked up a bunch more stats. Fair. That is the Kirk Ferentz approach, right? However, I mean, that's a great example. That is an example of how you kind of, essentially took a knee for the fourth quarter, so your stats don't look as good. But you can't say that and then also, talk about how you scored 3 points against South Dakota State and seven against Iowa State, all set up by a short field. And, you've scored one touchdown or less in 12 of the last 21 games on offense. That is an insane stat. 12 of the last 21 games, one touchdown or zero touchdowns.
I mean,
so you can't say like it's my fault because I take, we're taking the air out of the ball late. No, you're losing games 9-6 at Illinois. You're losing games 10-7 to Iowa State. You're barely beating South Dakota State 7-3. You got beat 42-3 in the Big Ten championship game last year because your offense stinks. I mean, it's cherry picking an example, and I don't like intellectually unsound arguments, and it makes me mad.
Yeah, I mean, that to everything that you just said pretty much puts that Purdue game as an anomaly. Like, that was really the only game where I really jumped on somebody early offensively and took the air out of the ball. Like, literally the only game this past season where
I think you're right.
I mean, you can't even count the bowl game because that was due to two pick sixes. Like, we're talking about offensive execution and scoring points. So,
and Rutgers too, two picks or two defensive touchdowns in that game.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, I agree with you. And that was something else that, you know, when we talked after the presser, the historical references were something that he really leaned on. And I mean, examples going back as far as the 80s to 1999 to 2009 to even several years ago, where there is, to his point, a proven history of being in somewhat of a rut and being able to work themselves out of it. Will history repeat itself this upcoming year? I don't know if it's as much of a slam dunk as he's making it seem, because he did express a lot of optimism going into next year. And Gary Barta did as well. There was a very fair question about the concern of lack of ticket sales going into next year because fans might be frustrated with the offense. And Barta pointed to the fact that Iowa added Cade McNamara, quarterback. They added Eric Allred, tight end. They've added pieces on the offensive line. And Kirk Ferentz spoke to that as well. He said, to be able to have more veterans on the offensive line is going to help. To be able to have two very high-level tight ends to take pressure off of the receivers is going to help. To be able to have somebody like a Cade McNamara who's been to the College Football Playoffs and won a Big Ten championship game is going to help. So, again, there's going to be a lot of pressure on these newcomers to deliver and to help bring this offense along as well. And obviously, there's going to be a large amount of pressure and faith in the current coaching staff to be able to coach these guys up, because it's really interesting. It seemed like going into last year, there were going to be no more excuses because of the doubling down and the poor performance from 2021. But the amount of injuries and circumstances has given way for more excuses going into this year. So what is the conversation going to be if Iowa brings in all of these new guys on offense and they keep the same offensive staff and it doesn't turn out the way that Ferentz and Barta and everybody within the building is foreseeing it to be? And this is a really big year upcoming. Last year of divisions, the best chance that Iowa's going to have to make a Big Ten championship for the foreseeable future. We don't know what the new Big Ten will look like. So not to say that it's never going to happen again, but this is a tailor-made year for Iowa to go back to Indianapolis. And if that doesn't happen, it's going to be hard to imagine the level of frustration that's going to exist within the fan base.
You're listening to Hawk Central from the Des Moines Register and KXNO. I'm Chad Lystico, talking Iowa football and Kirk Ferentz and Brian Ferentz with Kennington Smith. Great stuff there, Kennington. Let's one more argument that Kirk Ferentz made, or stat. It seemed like he was armed with some stats today. I think when he's kind of on the defense, he kind of does that.
He was prepared today.
Yeah, he was, but I feel like
he was prepared today. He had the receipts ready.
Yeah, some of the receipts, and that's where I'll go next. He pointed out that Iowa is 55-3 since 2015 when it scores 24 or more points in a game, and that's a really good stat. And I went back and checked it, and he's exactly right, 55-3. Now, that's obviously a testament to Phil Parker's defense that you're holding that many opponents to less than, you know, that you're winning games when you're scoring 24 or more. But there was also conveniently left out Iowa, you know, having those 58 games with 24 or more points, has had 40 games in that same span where they've scored less than 24 points. 40. Almost, you know, not, you know, about 40% of the time they don't score that many points. And when you talk about 24 points, I did not total it up exactly, but I can guarantee there's probably at least 10, I would say approximately 10 of those games, that would be my guess, of those 55, there was defensive touchdowns involved to get to the 24. I mean, I can think of a couple last season right off the top of my head, right? Several.
Yeah, for sure.
The Rutgers game. Did they get to 24 against Wisconsin? I think they did, right? I can't even remember now. But
I can't remember. Or even, like, not even defensive touchdowns.
Sure.
Scores that were set up by defensive turnovers.
Yeah.
Like, the two-play touchdown drive against Nevada sticks out in my mind. There was a few more of those throughout the season as well. So
yeah. So, yeah, 13 and 27 in those games. And they lost a total in these eight seasons, have lost 18 games in which they gave up less than 24 points or less. In other words, when the defense held the other team to under that 24 mark or 24, Iowa lost 18 times anyway. So you think about an offense, that's about almost 2.5 losses per season where your offense could not, you know, is losing games like we talked about, 9-6, 16-13, whatever, 17-12. And that's where I think the conversation is, right? I mean, that's essentially it. And Kirk Ferentz basically said today, we can't find anyone better, right? I mean, that's really what he said. And I don't disagree with some of what he said, because you know Jimmy and Joe's more than the X's and O's. I totally get that. You got to have players, but at the same time, you can't tell me that Kirk Ferentz genuinely assessed his program and concluded that the best offensive coordinator in America that you could buy for $1 million a year, which is about what he'll make this year, is Brian Ferentz, right? So is that has to be, if it wasn't his son, here's my question. And I know you can't say this for sure, but I think we can all say this. If it wasn't his son, would he have made a change? What do you think?
I would say so. But I also, in that same breath, he referenced what he learned under Hayden Fry and his background.
Yes.
Growing up in Pittsburgh, as stability is what wins ultimately in football. That Hayden Fry, I believe he said, never fired a coordinator. And yeah. The Steelers, obviously, at the head coaching position, rarely fire a coach. I don't know if they've ever fired a coach. I'm pretty sure, like, Chuck Noll, Bill Cowher left on their own terms, and Mike Tomlin will do the same. And he's of that same philosophy. So it is tough in a way to just outright say that if it wasn't his son, he would have fired him. But I will say this, he definitely would have considered it much heavier if it wasn't.
Yeah, that's fair.
So that's how I would answer that question. But I also don't think there's another program in America that would be going through something like Iowa's going through right now. I mean, like, let's really put this in perspective. Obviously, this was supposed to be a signing day presser, but this was essentially a presser for Kirk Ferentz to defend why he's keeping his offensive staff. And I don't know if that would happen anywhere else but Iowa, but those are the unique circumstances that the program finds itself in.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so a couple things. Number one, I actually do think Brian Ferentz is a good coach. I think he's a good offensive line coach. I think he's a good tight ends coach. I think he understands. I think he understands the game very well. I do not think he is a good play caller at all. I mean, you can.
That's fair.
I don't have, you know, I haven't done the deep dive, you know, article, and I'm sure we've got 8 months to do that now. But you can see it, right? The red zone failures. I mean, they rank near the bottom of the country in red zone almost every year, except when they had two first round NFL tight ends. And again, it's like, how often are you going to have that? So, you know, they kicked 29 field goals in 2019. I mean, that's, you're just leaving points on the board all the time, even when you're getting down there. And so Kirk Ferentz talks about points, right? Iowa's not putting points on the table. They're not putting sevens up. They're putting threes up. They're lucky they've had a good kicker for pretty much these 8 years, too. That gets credited to the offense, does it not? You know, so it's a little disingenuous there, I guess, to also just give all those points to the offense when your special teams have contributed a lot of those, too. Anyway, but here's my question. So I want to say that, but that said, I think we totally respect Kirk Ferentz, right? And his approach here. I mean, he is true to who he is. That has served him well for 24 years. And, Kennington, it may very well play out where Iowa has, it may not, but it may play out where Iowa, he's proven right, right? I mean, he's talked about how this has happened before, I guess. So do Iowa fans in this case, it's not about whether we in the media give him a chance. Well, of course, we're going to give him a chance. It doesn't mean we have to agree with everything the head coach of the Iowa football team says, and we can articulate that on, you know, on the radio or in columns or whatever. But, it, you know, I guess where I'm going with it is, do you think, even if Iowa has a good season, what do you think the reaction would be? You know, and by good season, I mean like 29 points a game from fans.
I mean, it
just seems like this is going to be a miserable 8 months.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's going to be a tough sell for the fans, but I do think that ultimately the fans are going to buy in for a few reasons. I mean, first of all, Kirk Ferentz is somebody who is in a unique position because he is so tied into the fabric of Iowa football across multiple decades. I mean, he has so much built-in equity within the fan base going back to his time as an assistant and how he's rebuilt the program over the last 24 years. And this is one of those situations where multiple things can be true at once. Obviously, the offense has not performed well, but Iowa is still winning, and they were really a Cooper DeJean injury away in the Nebraska game from playing for another Big Ten championship. And I think that is kind of what he is leaning on. And I think that the optimism around the offensive additions and the allure of what, of how good the defense and the special teams will be, will draw fans back into believing in the team for this year. I don't see a scenario where once it gets time for the season to come up that the fans are going to be checked out. Like, obviously today is very polarizing and the conversations and the speculation around the program is only going to increase up until they play their first game. But I do think ultimately the fans are going to buy in. Here's why I think that that book will stop. If Iowa does not make it to the Big Ten championship, I can't quantify success in yards and points. I have to go by the same measure that Kirk Ferentz is going off of, which is wins and losses. And if Iowa's offense is the reason why the team does not achieve its goals, which is being a championship level team, and that's something that Kirk Ferentz said today, the goal is to become a championship level team, and they've done it before, to his point. If they do not return to that standard, that's when I really feel like you're going to see kind of that revolt, so to say, from the fan base. I do think that it's going to be a tough sell to get them invested, but I do think ultimately they're going to buy in, and next year's result is really going to be the true turning point in kind of how Ferentz is perceived in terms of the direction that he's taking the program in.
So we've only got about this is a long segment. We're going to go a little long on this one, maybe 6 minutes left in this segment. It's possible we will cut out, you know, some of the portal stuff, some of the new signing day stuff. But honestly, guys, we have, you know, 7 months to talk about the 2023 roster. Let's dig a little more into this offensive coordinator conversation. A couple last things. We want to get to three-word headlines. So let's, if you have time, Kennington, while I'm talking, if you can call those up so we can each kind of pick and choose a few. There still is that open door for me that Brian Ferentz could move to the NFL. I mean, Kirk Ferentz was very careful in his words, I would say, today. I did not hear him ever say, Brian is our offensive coordinator in 2023. Never heard him say that, right? He said that our staff, no staff changes for now, basically. Ian Rappaport earlier today noting that Patriots tight ends coach Nick Caley interviewing for the OC job at the Houston Texans under D'Amico Ryans, newly hired D'Amico Ryans. So, you know, if he's the current tight ends coach of the Patriots, moves to the Texans potentially, that creates an opening in New England where Brian's buddy Bill O'Brien is the OC, newly named OC. They're reshuffling their staff in New England on offense right now. I don't want to close all those doors just yet because we know you asked about John Budmeyer today. He is still in the mix, right? I mean, he's going to be in these meetings on Monday when they go back to work and talk about scheme and whatnot. So that to me is notable, especially because Budmeyer seemingly has been instrumental in bringing in Cade McNamara and Deacon Hill. So I just want to put that out there, leave the door open. Did you get that? Do you have that feeling or sense as well that maybe this chapter is not shut, open and shut, or am I kind of just sort of looking for, you know, shreds of optimism for those that are hoping for a change?
Yeah, I mean, I think a little bit of both. I think that obviously the scenario in which Brian Ferentz is not the offensive coordinator is going to be him getting another job, most likely in the NFL. And right now, the NFL coaching carousel is not done yet. So there is a chance that he could just, you know, I guess get promoted, so to say, up to the NFL. And then Iowa could just slide in Bud Meyer right there as offensive coordinator, go get somebody else, maybe make Bud Meyer the quarterback's coach, give him a promotion. He's still in the building. So there is something that is keeping him close to the program. Maybe it's his relationship with McNamara and Hill. Maybe it's something different. But I don't think it's done quite yet. I mean, when we talked before we recorded this, I mean, the move of Ken O'Keefe from quarterback's coach to analyst didn't happen until a later point, even as we're speaking today on February 1st. So it is possible that late changes could be made. And the process of talking about the scheme hasn't even started yet. It's going to start on Monday per Kirk Ferentz. So this is how it is right now. Could this still be the same staff in September? Absolutely. But it's not all the way concluded yet. Maybe majority concluded, but there's still a chance for change.
Yeah. I mean, I remember Derek Foster getting the job with the LA Chargers pretty late in the you know, like a month or so after the season. That stuff is happening right now, basically, in the NFL. So stay tuned. We got to get to some three-word headlines because these are kind of always interesting. If you find a there are a few positive ones, okay, just so for the record. But of the several hundred of these, not many. Clint Harms, Groundhog Day again. Clint Harms again, 24 years in points. Sean Welsh, not the former offensive lineman, uniquely qualified coordinator.
That's a good one. That was something that was interesting.
We haven't talked about that yet. Yeah.
Yeah, Gary Barter said that Brian is uniquely qualified based on his background and upbringing through the program and, you know, how he was an essential assistant before he was promoted coordinator, all of which is true, but still funny nonetheless. This from Hawkeyes, lumped them together, referencing when Kirk was asked about Brian's performance and brought up Phil Parker and LeVar Woods. So there's that. This from Chris Weiner, hopefully I said your name correctly. His ad name is Hawk NIL. I'm guessing that's Illinois. Not sold out. Again, how tough of a sell is it going to be for the fans to invest in the program and spend money on season tickets if Brian Ferentz is still the offensive coordinator? I think is a very fair question.
Yeah. Oops, sorry. Yeah, there's some others like I Am Out, Where's New Kirk? Ferentz Family Business from Hayden Fry's mustache. Persona non grata says, we all knew. D-Shrock, nothing ever changes. Nate Fitzpatrick, that's football, snort. Someone had, I can't find it, but someone said something about doubling down. I want to say, this is tripling down, right? Because last year was doubling down. Was it not?
Right. Yeah. This from MP at name Typo Attack, the family business.
It's kind better for basketball, but not in football.
Right, exactly. Yeah, works better in that sport, but I thought that was a funny one. This from Jim Miles Sr., okay, prove it. I mean, last year felt like a prove it year. There were some circumstances that seemingly have left the coaching staff off of the hook, but 2023 has to be the prove it year, no?
Yeah, I mean, yes, yeah, yeah. I mean, they have won 18 games despite this offense over the last 2 years, and I think that's kind of the point, right? There was one about Phil Connors. That was a good one, another Groundhog Day reference. Go ahead.
This from Warren Larson. Please score 24.
Yeah, well, what was it this year? 17.8?
Yeah.
And that's with defensive scores.
So, yeah. Right. Yeah, far short of 24. I mean, I see a lot of fans talk, you know, stop buying tickets, fans, your move. Again, like kind of looking at the fans as a means of affecting change because, you know, ultimately, right, one way to affect any business, not just football, is to affect a company's bottom line. And I guarantee a half empty Kinnick Stadium would definitely get Gary Barta's attention. Will that happen? Probably not.
No.
But an interesting talking point nonetheless.
Yep. The last one, this is probably the most common one, actually. Definition of insanity. There was a lot of submissions of that one. So thank you all for contributing. I know this was a really long segment. Let's just table the talk on – there's going to be tons of time for football between now and September. Let's talk about the 2023 roster. We'll have a ton of time to do that in the spring. You can read our National Signing Day coverage online, and Dargan Southard is writing about that as we speak. So anyway, we will table Iowa football for now. Coming up next, we turn our attention to a once again surging Iowa basketball team. The Hawkeyes are hot, and the Illinois Fighting Illini are coming to town. We'll discuss that and more next on Hawk Central 106.3 KXNO.
Everything you need to know about the Hawkeyes. It's Hawk Central with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 106.3 KXNO. I'm your host, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register. With me, as always, Kennington Smith of the Des Moines Register. We cover the Hawkeyes. He's in Iowa City. I'm in Des Moines. We are with you until 10 p.m. tonight. Kennington, awesome, awesome segment on Iowa football. We could have easily talked for 3 hours, maybe four. I could have done it. Let's talk some hoops. What do you say?
Yeah, for sure.
Things are going really well right now for the Iowa men's basketball program. Sunday, a 93-82 win against Rutgers, and then last night, 86-70 against Northwestern. These are two of the stingiest defenses in the Big Ten, yet the Hawkeyes are racking up points in bunches right now. Kennington, what do you attribute the success to?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just a level of intensity and a gear that Iowa's basketball team can hit that makes them one of the more formidable teams in the Big Ten. The problem is there hasn't been that consistency of this gear that they can hit. It's win streak here, lose a few games the next, there, come back, win a few more. They have stretches of brilliance in games and then stretches where they seem disengaged and things are not connected. But when they truly buy in and they are playing at a high level on both ends of the floor, that's the Iowa that can, challenge for a double bye in the Big Ten tournament and potentially make another run at a tournament championship. They're certainly capable. We've seen them do it before. That's kind of where I think things have turned the tide. And then obviously you can discount the fact that they play really, really well at home. So them coming home and having this homestand off of those losses certainly helps as well. But that would probably be the main thing that I would point to. It seems like whenever Iowa has these kind of signature moments, players, namely Philip Robracha, I think is probably the main one that brings it up, is effort and a certain level of effort, intensity, and energy that they're playing with that makes them hard to beat.
Yeah, Kennington, the last 10 minutes of that game last night to me were just that was some of Iowa's best basketball of the season. Maybe the full game at Rutgers was pretty darn good too, but this was impressive. I mean, Peyton Sanford comes off the bench. I was down, I believe it was 55-54, 56-55, and just kind of peels off a corner and hits a jumper, and all of a sudden the Hawkeyes we're just unstoppable between him and Robracha. A 6-point play here. Robracha scored 8 points in a row during one stretch. Sanford was just unbelievable. I don't even know how I would answer this, so I'm going to ask you since you were in the arena. Who was the bigger star last night for the Hawkeyes, Philip Robracha or Peyton Sanford? And it seems weird because Chris Murray had a really good game, but he was the third guy last night.
Yeah, I mean, the star, I feel like it would probably have to be Peyton just because he had those like electrifying plays that just ignited the crowd. The 6-point play was definitely one of them. The big three right before halftime, another three that put them up six, which at that point was their biggest lead of the second half. So he had those flash plays, but you also have to give Phillip his credit for being kind of the stabilizer. I think Peyton turned it on, towards the end, but Phillip was somebody who really kind of kept the team in it, especially early, came out aggressively, scored the first 6 points. And then you look at his stat line, 20-10, 4 assists. So he was distributing. He was playing strong defense as well. So, I wish they could be co-stars, but to answer your question, I'd probably have to lean Peyton just because he kind of had those like marquee moments that really stick out in your mind.
Yeah, I would agree totally because, yeah, that six-point play, I mean, you're never going to – I don't know if you'll ever see that again with a three-pointer, a foul. I mean, that's his second four-point play in, like, dramatic fashion at that basket in Carver in a clutch game this season. And then he tacks on the two technical free throws from Chris Collins. This was a good – I got an email from a reader named Mike. I'm not sure if he wants me to share his full name, but he pointed out – that in Iowa's five Big Ten losses, Peyton Sanford is averaging 2.6 points per game. In Iowa's six Big Ten wins, he is averaging 16.3 points per game. Safe to say he's our not-so-secret sauce. I mean, to me, that's what we've been talking about this whole time. I mean, when he's on, this team is really tough to beat. And, you know, people were like, why did they give Peyton Sanford the last shot against Michigan State? That's why, because of the shots like last night. They see that in practice. And it's a shame that shot didn't go in, or those two shots didn't go in against Michigan State. But he's a really likable guy. He brings fire. And I feel like his resurgence has been the reason that Iowa has busted out of its 0-3 Big Ten start and is now 6-5, has won 6 of 8 Big Ten games. I'm voting Peyton Sanford right now as almost the team MVP in this season turnaround.
Yeah, I mean, what you're bringing up about Michigan State, I thought it was notable that he got the play call right before halftime. And I know Chris Murray had two fouls, but there wasn't a threat of him picking up a third foul as Iowa was on offense with only a few seconds left before the half. So I thought it was notable in a good moment for him that he was able to get a shot at the buzzer going into halftime. He made that shot, and that sparked what was a 14-point second half for him. And I don't want to make it sound like I'm comparing Peyton Sanford to like a Klay Thompson, but he kind of has that same feel for those who follow the NBA. Yeah. For those who follow the NBA, like, you know, and Klay Thompson is somebody when he gets hot and he kind of has, you know, these, you know, 37-point quarters and, you know, these crazy three-point shooting streaks, especially at Oracle Arena, it just does something to the momentum in the building. And Peyton has that same ability. And when you have somebody who can hit perimeter shots like that, and not just those shots, those demoralizing shots, like a three-pointer plus the foul at a critical moment, it counts for 3 points plus another point, but it feels like more points because of the momentum that swings the in Iowa's direction. And the fact that he has that ability, and then you bring in a Chris Murray, who's obviously dominant, a Philip Obracha, who's ascending, and Tony Perkins, I thought, played with great energy against Northwestern. There may have been some questionable decisions, but his energy and the effort that he played with is another thing that I think brings another gear to this team. So when Peyton is operating like that and it just frees things up for everybody else, that's when Iowa is at their best.
Yeah, no question about it. Yeah, I've enjoyed Perkins has had a little bit of resurgence these last two games. Maybe not just lighting it up on the scoreboard, but he's doing a lot of things, as you mentioned, Kennington. And here's something I wrote about in my Five Thoughts column this morning. I like how Fran McCaffrey is. Number one, he actually called a timeout at the end of the first half. So kudos, Fran. Keep doing that. Don't. It's a use it or lose it timeout. You actually lose it if you don't use it. But he's doing a great job finding, to me, his best five hot hands at the end of games down the stretch. He's been really good at that this year. You think about Aaron Ulis has had some, you know, some big moments in games, and he stayed in. And you think about, you know, there's even Josh Dix. Remember that game where he was in late? I can't even remember which. Again, I lose track of which game was which, but he was like a late guy in a game. You know, Perkins had that big game against Maryland. So I like how he's taken this roster and found the five best guys because he's got that versatility. And he basically plays them like the last 12 minutes or so, you know, 8 to 10, 12 minutes, and runs with them. We've seen that happen time and time again. I think that's been key to this win streak. And now the rotation, Kennington, has basically been whittled down to eight guys. And and now that Patrick is back, Patrick McCaffrey, I think they're good. I think this eight is the eight you want. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I know that you know, Fran has prided himself on the depth of the team, and this team is not as deep right now as it's been in years past, but it really doesn't have to be because you have eight guys who are really good, and I believe seven of them, with the exception of Josh Dix, are either upperclassmen or have played a lot of games. So you have a veteran-laden eight guys in a group, and while they may not be the deepest in the Big Ten, their balance is something that is very notable. And you look at a team that beat a very formidable Northwestern team. Like, this isn't, you know, your mom and dad's Northwestern. They're a good team. If you watch that game, you know that they're a real team with a legit defense. And they held Chris Murray to just one field goal in the second half, yet Iowa runs away with the game and wins by 16. That's something that is exciting if you're an Iowa fan. They have five guys in double figures, and pretty much everybody who played in that second half in terms of significant minutes contributed something to that win. So it's not the 10-11 man rotation that they might have had last year, but you have eight really solid guys that, you know, barring injury or foul trouble, you feel good about their chances pretty much against any team in the Big Ten. And what's also notable about these two wins that they've had on this homestand is that they've come against two teams in the upper half of the Big Ten. They're obviously going to face a huge test on Saturday in Illinois, who I believe is ranked second right now in the Big Ten standings, and then they're going to go to Purdue next week. So they're going to face, again, the top part of the conference. I think that Purdue game is going to tell a lot about where Iowa is as a team, but the way they're executing right now and the rotation that Fran has found, you have to feel good about where Iowa is going into the second half of their Big Ten slate.
Yeah, you laid it out right there, Kennington. This four-game stretch that Iowa is in is against the top four teams in the Big Ten. You know, second-place Rutgers, second-place Northwestern, now second-place Illinois, and then, of course, first-place Purdue next Thursday in West Lafayette. But let's talk about this Illinois game now. Iowa is now 14-8 overall, 6-5 in Big Ten play, up to number 32 in the net. Illinois 16-6, 7-4 in the Big Ten, 24 in the net. This is a single play game for the Hawkeyes this year. It's the only time Illinois and Iowa will meet. This game is always heated. And by the way, nice job by you saying your mom and dad's Northwestern. You are officially a Big Ten guy now.
I'm honored.
This game will definitely be heated, probably really fast-paced, high-scoring, entertaining. What would it mean for the Hawkeyes to go 3-0 this week?
I think it would mean a lot. I mean, you're talking about a potential run in which, like you said, Iowa has beaten three teams that would have been ranked or at second place in the Big Ten, and the confidence that they would be playing with going into the Purdue game, which, again, going back to last year, I know it's a different team, but Iowa played a number one Purdue down to the wire without Keegan Murray a year ago in West Lafayette. So this is obviously not a place where Iowa is going to be or shouldn't be intimidated to play in. They beat Purdue for the Big Ten championship a year ago. So while Purdue has kind of run away, so to say, with the Big Ten standings at this point, this is not an insurmountable opponent for Iowa. So I think that for them to be able to win this game, have that confidence and have that momentum going into Purdue would mean a great deal for the team, especially if, a Tony Perkins could have another breakout game. If an Aaron Ewless could have a breakout game, obviously they're going to have a tough matchup with Illinois' backcourt. But the win obviously would be the most important thing. But if there's, you know, certain guys on the team that can kind of have that breakout performance going into Purdue, I think that would spell a good omen for Iowa.
Absolutely. Can't wait. Should be a really fun game. 1:30 p.m. on Fox on Saturday. And then huge women's game tomorrow night. Iowa and Maryland, 7:30 p.m. on ESPN, the main ESPN. We're running out of time here, but I wanted to point you all to a piece I wrote on Hannah Stolke. Interviewed Monica Sonano and Jan Jensen for that piece. For those that have been following the women, Stolke is kind of like a couple comparisons, kind of like Sanford is this year, where her rise has really lifted this team up. But also, I didn't put this in the article, but she's kind of like Keegan Murray as a freshman a couple years ago when Luca Garza was the star, where you know, kind of learning off the bench, but just contributing in so many ways and really lifting that team up and making it more versatile. So she's really fun to watch. She's really made this team special. Huge game Thursday night. And the reason I point that out is because I can't be there. And I wanted to thank you, Kennington and Dargan Southard, for kind of carrying the load for Hawk Central in person. For those that don't know, I broke my leg and my ankle is torn up and I have to get surgery on Friday to repair that. And so I am kind of out on the sidelines for now. But I'm really confident. It's not the biggest deal in the world. I just feel bad. I can't be in person. I'm going to get obviously going to get through it and everything. But I really appreciate you, Kennington. I appreciate Dargan. And I just wanted to publicly say thank you for all the hard work that you've been putting out.
Yeah, for sure. It's appreciated. And, you know, next man up is not just a common phrase used in Iowa athletics. We use it here at Hawk Central, and it's a real thing. So, you know, we know how much you do for us, you know, in the forefront and behind the scenes as well. So it's no problem for us to pick you up in this moment. And I know you're going to continue to work hard while laid up and, you know, just looking forward to you being back 100%. But in the meantime, we're going to keep this thing rolling. And when you're back at full tilt, you know, we're going to be a formidable team. Obviously, we're formidable now, but you know what I'm getting at.
Even better. That's right. Come back
right,
stronger.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you, my man. And thank you for joining us, Hawk Central fans. I know this was a long-awaited episode. Great news. We will be back in our regular time slot next week. Finally. Back home at 6 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday here on 106.3 KXNO. This is Chad Lystico for Kennington Smith saying so long, thank you, and good night.